Hello everyone, and welcome to today's Austrian Wine Time Masterclass with Gunther and Regina Treebaumer. My name is Antoinette Landejean from Cork & Fork in Washington, D.C. We are a premium wine store founded by a multi-generational flying winemaker originally from Champagne, France. I'd like to introduce today's presenter, Gunther. Gunther comes from a long-established artisan and small farmer winemaking heritage dating back to 1691. Regina and Gunther honor both their ancestors and soils with their winemaking style. They are committed to respecting nature by incorporating the minimal use of chemicals, herbicides, fertilizers, and adapting their land to dry farming. Their wines are made from healthy soils with vital vines that create premium grape quality. The grapes are meticulously handpicked and undergo gentle maceration followed by minimal influence winemaking. All of these components create wines full of character. For those joining us live, we'd love to hear from you. Place your questions in the Q&A and we will get to them time allowing. Since our guest is joining us live from Austria, quite a few hours ahead of us here in the United States, we will move immediately into the presentation. First, we introduce Louis, the importer of these beautiful wines. Louis?
Thanks, you guys. And I'm Louis de Rosferoge. I work for Turco Vino, and we've been doing business since 2009. And I just wanted to thank you guys all for coming. We're happy to have Gunther and Regina with us tonight. And I wanted to thank everybody at Cork & Fork. And I wanted to also thank our friend Steven here, who works for Constantine Wines, who is our distributor in Washington, D.C. Gunther.
So let's start. We prepared a little presentation for you, and we are going to taste four different wines. Just a small sector out of our big range of different wines, and the big range derives from the very special wine growing conditions in Rust. We are a very compact small town facing Lake Neusiedl, and it's if you are on Lake Neusiedl, you see that Rust is like a gently falling down to the lake facing amphitheater, and the lake has the warmth of the summer or also during autumn. And that's the reason why we just have a little bit more ripeness than all the other villages around. And that's, again, the reason historically why Rust has such a special position. For those who know the history of Rust, or for those who will know it when we are ready right here. Rust is one of the very, very last places in the global wine world where we can harvest white wine, red wine, and sweet wine every year in a very high quality. Even though Rust is a very small place, and you have to imagine Lake Neusiedl is a little bit, is a 65 kilometers south of Vienna, and it's a big lake. And on the eastern shore of the lake, it's pretty flat. On the western shore where we are sitting, it's hilly. And let's have a closer look to Rust and to the Treebaumers. We are here since 1691, but let's start with the with our position. You see, Austria is a very small country in the center of Europe. Usually when I make a presentation for people outside of Austria, Switzerland or Germany, I start with, there's one thing I have to say, we don't have kangaroos in Austria. So that's the first question is already solved. We are not Australia, we are Austria. You know, this is the nation with the Lipizzaner horses and with the Sachertorte and the Wiener Schnitzel. And Austria can be divided in two parts. That's the Alpine part, which now has the gray color. And the eastern part where there is, it's more flat landscape, better wine growing conditions because it's warmer. And we are living in times of climate change, so we cannot say that all the Austrian wine derives from the eastern part. Already in Ober, in Upper Austria, in Tirol, or in Vorarlberg, you will find wine again, also in Carinthia in the south, because it gets warmer, and in very special local sites, they can do wine growing as well there. But the big volumes, the bigger volumes in comparison are deriving from the east. You see the blue line is the Danube River, and the yellow spot, that's Vienna, that's our capital with the airport. And about 65 kilometers south, there's the little blue spot, that's Lake Neusiedl. And now we already arrived in Burgenland. So Burgenland is our region. It's about 300,000 inhabitants. So it's pretty small, like everything in Austria, excepting the self-confidence maybe. And there's a special place called Rust. Rust, the name is deriving from the elm trees, because in Hungarian, the elm is called Rusti. And Burgenland is part of Austria since 1921. So after World War I, it was up to World War I and up to 1921, Burgenland was part of the Hungarian part of the monarchy. And there has been German-speaking population. So people decided, let's join Austria, which was, looking behind, it was a very good thing for the people living there. Going closer, you see the lake, which is the blue part, makes a natural bay, the only natural bay on Lake Neusiedl. And the yellow area, this is reed. So it's I don't know if you know that. It's a plant, let's say 3 to 4 meters high. People in formal times used to cover their roofs with it. And that's the place where all the fish and the birds are living, because the whole lake is protected by nature. More than 225 kinds of birds and a lot of fish. And the fish is not living just in the open water, it's living in the reed mostly. And the red area, finally, this is a little wine growing area of Rust, speaking about a little bit more than 400 hectares. And it's like the enlargement of the bay. In Rust, we just have wine growing. We don't have, in Austria, we say we don't have Kärntl or the Härntl. Kärntl means we don't have corn or wheat. And Härntl, we don't have any cattle, we just have wine. And the wine is here since 3,000 years, which has a very long tradition. And as it was said in the introduction, we are living from our tradition, but we don't want to transport the ashes. We want to transport the fire. That makes a big difference. Going even closer, you see various red lines. These are our vineyards. So in former times, we had the Burgundy kind of law that every child gets the same part if the parents retire. So on the one side, it was very fair, especially to female. On the other side, it was leading to a very, very tiny split up of all the parcels and all the blocks. You see all the red lines are our vineyards. But we are not a 100 hectare estate. We just have about 24, and we have more than 45 different vineyard blocks, but all inside Rust, nothing outside. And here you see different names of vineyards. So we have a 500 year old system of vineyards. People made it such a long time ago that we even from some names, we don't know why it's called like that. And it's a, it's it's very special for our landscape. People carved 5 big terraces into the landscape. So they saved it with dry stone walls. And they also used to say which step is the most worthy one. If we look at the step number 1 and step number 2, they are very close to the lake, very close to the reed, to the moisture, to the birds. So we have big problems with the starlings. And if we go to the top of the hill, there it's very windy, and you can just plant a few special wind-resistant grapes over there. And in the center of the slope, these are the most worthy vineyards, like in Burgundy. So it was the same law like in Burgundy, and it's the same circumstances regarding the splitting up of the different blocks. So you have some crews like Morachet in Burgundy. There's also, it's 5.7 hectares and 120 owners. It's a kind of the same in Rust. And you see the white line over here that says that we have two different soils. On the southern side, we have just silicatic soils, which means weathered slate, weathered schist, deriving from the Rust Schotter. So you have to imagine 20 million years ago, there was a big river running like that from south to north, transporting slate material. So usually slate is very flat, but this material, which was transport, it has rounded edges. And in the 19th century, when they registered all the land very carefully, the geologists said, so this is called the Ruster Schotter, the Ruster Gravel. The stones have nothing to do with gravel, but because of the rounded edges, they called it gravel. It's a slate material. And after the last ice time, the soil we are working on now was developed out of that material. And in the north, so over here, the more north you go, it gets chalky and chalky. That means this area once was under a sea, and there from there the chalk is deriving. And the closer you move to the lake, the more it's covered with loam. That's not so interesting in general, but in our case, Blaufränkisch is mostly planted here. Blaufränkisch is our main variety, it's our lifeblood variety. And Blaufränkisch loves the combination of chalk and loam. From here, it generates the cherry and the black pepper. So it has a special reason why my background is a flowering cherry tree, because this aroma is very typical for our wines, for our red wines. Here you have a view over the lake. So Rust is very compact. Because of its special history, we have 3 churches. We have a Catholic church and the Protestant church, which is not so usually in Austria, where there are just 2% of Protestants. But in Burgenland, which was part of Hungary, there they have been more tolerant to the religions. So there we have about 15% of Protestants. And most of the Rust old wine-growing families, they belong to that religion. Then you have the flat lake. And on the other side, you see the flat landscape, no hills, very sandy soils, very early ripening, a big wine growing region. And here on the eastern shore, you can also maybe see hints to the bay I was speaking about. And let me start this. As I had a grandfather, which was historian, and I also, besides the fact that I already have the wine virus since I'm 12 years old, so I got the virus just a few years before I started to drink wine, I knew it has to be something with wine. But my other passion is history, and I always followed my grandfather when he was making historical tours to Rust. When I was 12 years old, the tourism guy said, "You are such a capacity, why don't you make historical guides?" to my grandfather. And I followed him, and it was always planned for approximately 2 hours. And after 5 hours, then the last people dropped off because their brains have been filled up for years. And I swallowed all this information. So it was always interesting to me why things happened like they happened then really. And the closer history starts about 1,000 years before our time. The population here have been Celts. So the same population maybe like in France or in England or in Ireland, also in Spain. And the Romans always told about the Celts that they have been good fighters, and usually they also have been good drinkers. So they made wine to get drunk, and it was very primitive, but it was wine, and it's historically proved. Then about 80 before Christ, the Romans occurred. They occupied the land up to Danube River. So Danube was a national border. They called it Limes. And the Romans, when they came, they started to forbid the wine growing. On the one side, that the fighters may be not as good fighters anymore. On the other side, so that there's no competition for the Italian, for the Roman wine growing. But the more they needed more and more soldiers to defend the border, the more they needed wine, because in that time, every Roman soldier, it said that it should be true, every Roman soldier became or got 2 to 3 liters of wine every day. So maybe they also wanted to have good fighters out of that. Now, the wines in that time wouldn't have been such strong wines as we produce right now. And they very often mixed it with water, because then it was antiseptic. Wine was more antiseptic than just water. And in that time, that seems was the big problem. And about 500 years later, they disappeared. There was big changes in whole Europe, and the Roman Empire, the Western Roman Empire broke down. And about 800 after Christ, Charlemagne, in German Karl der Große, from the Empire of the Franks, he sent German settlers to our area. And with them, the Cistercians monks arrived. They built big monasteries, and these have always been the centers for wine knowledge as well. So what do I mean with wine knowledge? So the Celts made wine just out of the grapes with nothing, the background. The Romans already learned from the Greek people what sulfur is to conservate the wines, and they also added some spices, and they also knew how to filter wine. And the Cistercians, they developed the knowledge more and more, and they have been responsible that wine growing arrived there where it is right now in Austria, and also Hungary and the neighboring countries. And from there on, there was a little village called Rust, and because it was right beside the Bernstein, the Bernsteinstraße, so the Bernstein Street from the Baltic countries to the Mediterranean Sea, which was a very, very old trading line. And about at the end of the 15th century, you know, that was the time when Christoph Columbus wanted to sail to India, but he never arrived. There was a big continent in between. And in that time, the Ottoman Turks have been a very powerful empire in the on the Mediterranean Sea area, and they already occupied the Balkan countries, and they wanted also to occupy and then to invade Central Europe, and that just goes over Austria. Sorry. And in that time, it was a privilege for people to have walls and towers to defend their place. And if you wanted to build such walls and towers, you had to pay money to those who are on top of the society. So, and the reason why that small spot was able to buy the privilege to be a market town, so where there is at least four times in a year a big market, and to sign their export barrels with a big R they was burning in there, it was kind of branding. The reason was because the people felt that they had to defend themselves. It was an open landscape. There was not very much mountains, and so it was easy for invaders to go to that area. So they built their walls, and the reason why they've been able to raise all the money was because in that time the first noble sweet wines occurred. The first proved date is 1525. Maybe it was a few years before as well. People had to flee from the invaders, and when they came back in autumn, in November, they found their grapes rotten, and out of that accident, they collected the grapes, they fermented it, and all of a sudden they saw, wow, the wines stay sweet. And in that time, there was no raffinated sugar. So people knew sweetness just from dried fruits and from honey, or from sweet wines from the Mediterranean countries, where they dried they sun-dried the grapes and made wine of it. But it was even more worthy than gold. So for these people, it was a really good accident that they discovered we can do it in another way around. And I always say people from Rust have been one of the first to reckon that this also works without invaders. So you just have to wait long enough. And in that open amphitheater, where then in October it gets very foggy, that's perfect for the development of the botrytis fungus. And it was accumulating in the year 1681, when a few families from Rust raised an incredible amount of money. So 60,000 gulden in our times, that would be, I don't know, 400 million euro, which is incredible for just a few people. And additionally, 30,000 liters of Rust Ausburg, so of TBA, of Trockenbernerstese, sweet wines, over 10 years. So this is 10 vintages altogether. And they became a royal free town. So there was no local, government, which was powerful enough to tell the people from Rust what they had to do. Just the Hungarian king or the Austrian emperor have to been able to do that. And they got several privileges, and some of these privileges are still here over 300 years up to the present. And 10 years later, so 1691, the Triebammer family, which have been religious refugees, they moved from the Austrian part of the empire to the over the border to the Hungarian part. And finally, 1691, they arrived in Rust. And in that time, there was also mainly wine growing there. So they got connected with wine. And I would say, thanks God, we take profit out of that. Then 200 years later, the phylloxera arrives. So, you know, the bug phylloxera, it's weakening the vines, And all the wine growing with the time disappeared, and the people took this opportunity, and they also started to replant with new technologies. So with grafted wine, with American rootstocks, and they also took the opportunity to not only to replant, they also made a big change of varieties. So since then we have Sauvignon Blanc, Cabernet Franc, and Chardonnay in our area. So what we now call the international varieties. And those varieties, which in that time they had got the impression are suited to our area, like Blaufränkisch or Furmint, they survived the changing. Some others, mostly Hungarian varieties, they disappeared in that time. So after World War I, as I said, Burgenland becomes part of Austria. And you know the time since 1921, what happened else in the world, quite a lot. Finally, in 2003, Regina and me, we took over the winery. It was a 6-hectare winery, a very small property. And now we are working on 24 hectares. We both worked in the wine business quite a long time before. So Regina was founding together with Pepe Schuler the Austrian Wine Academy. She also was the first one on continental Europe to get the honors degree on the diploma part of the education. And we got to know us at the Wine Academy already 29 years ago. And the next important dates are quite close. Since 2019, we are part of the Giacomino family, which is a big pleasure for us. And finally, we are also part of the Cork and Fork portfolio. And we hope that it's going on like that. So zack, 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 every few years, a new date where we can say, yeah. In former times, it was not usual for common people to have big houses made of stones. The people in Rust have been able to, and because they had a lot of stones right in the environment, so limestone and schist stone, and the buildings, the type of architecture is called the Ruster Bürger Barock, so the Baroque feeling of the Rust citizens. We are here, as I said, since 1691, 24 hectares, 120,000 bottles. I say bottles, not cases. And the smallest description is we are a low-tech, high-effort winery. So it's a lot of handmade things, not a lot of fancy machinery. It's poorly a lot of physical handmade things, and it's dry farmed. So we would have the water, but we don't use it more than the wines need it. So there's no irrigation at all. Also because of the small structures, it wouldn't be able to invest it. So we are certified sustainable Austria. We are not certified bio organic and things like that, because we are resistant to any consultancy and things like that. Now, and the most important sentence here is Austrian wine should be defined by fruit. So the use of new oak is very uncommon in our winery. There's more view to the lake, and this is Regina and me. So she's the boss, and I'm the speaker. before we got our children, we have been traveling all the wine areas in the world and spent a lot of money to taste everything which is necessary. So because of that, we know what's going on. And now, since a few years, we try to bring it down to the road. What we've learned. Rust is also, just to give you an impression, Rust is also the country, the town of the white stork. There's no white here. Our style is always farmer style, very close to earth, very close to the soil, open to new technologies and new ideas, of course, but in the way that we just take that what we need, and we don't believe just in technology. And you very often see pictures like that, with it should demonstrate how close we are to the soil. That's very modern right now, but in Rus, since many, many years, there's a saying about the Triebaumer family, the Triebaumer clan. The Triebaumers, they don't stand on the soil, they stand in the soil. And that's a saying which shows that we don't do that things just since a few years because everybody's speaking and writing about it. We just do it because we think that's the right thing. And finally, you see first time you see our labels. There's no nice chateau on the label because we don't have any nice chateaus. We just have our name. And out of our experience of worldwide wine traveling, we saw that we have to focus on those things which are typical for Rus since many, many years. That's Furmint and Muscat on the white wine side, which are here since 500 years. The Blaufränkisch, nothing to say for that. And finally, the Rustausbruch, so the noble sweet wine, which was writing the history of that small town. A few sentences to the wines. We want to be very, very characteristic. So we want to be different. We are not mainstream winemakers. Blaufränkisch is the chief matter. Then Rustausbruch, you have to imagine, this is the oldest wine appellation for Austria. Rust as the spot and Ausbruch as the method, so the selection of botrytis. And we make very much classic wines. That means no news of new oak. And if people taste our wines blind, we would be pleased if they say, wow, that could be from Burgenland even, and not from, I don't know, anywhere else, southern Spain, southern Italy, whatever. One close look to botrytis, then we go step by step for the wine tasting. It's a combination of wind-dried berries like that, and combination of botrytis berries, where it's covered with the botrytis fungus. And Ausbruch means you break out the dried part of the grape. So you do a hand selection, and that's what people do since 500 years. And the result is a very concentrated, unique sweet wine style. And I think now it's on time. Regina showed me already used half an hour to go for the 2018 Furmint. Furmint is a Hungarian variety, and it's before phylloxera, it was the main variety in our area as well, but the main volume of Furmint you definitely find in Hungary, find a little bit in Slovenia, and a little bit in Austria. So out of the 45,000 hectares of Austrian wine growing, which is about 1% of the global wine growing, you find nowadays maybe 15 hectares of Furmint. And that's located in Rus. So there the people saved the Furmint over centuries up to now. And we have about 1% of the Austrian Furmint production. So we have 1 hectare with old wines. That means they are 35 years old, which is good luck because they are real adult wines. Yes, you see it's highly rated for a fruity basic Furmint. We also have a single vineyard Furmint. It has its medium bodied for Austrian dimensions. And one of the best advantages of Furmint is its late ripening, and it always has good acidity, even in times of climate change, where we always have to fight for our acidity level. As I said, Burgenland and Lake Neusiedl area is one of the warmest part of Middle Europe. So we always have to keep a big focus on the freshness of the wines. And in combination with the schisty soils, that works pretty well. So in former times, our area was a white wine area. And now the red wine percentage was increasing, and the date of picking is always going further and further on to the summer month. So when I was a little boy, we started picking in October. Now we have to start to pick in August because of climate change. It's global warming. It's getting warmer and warmer. And we have to get our new ideas with that conditions. Furmint in that version, as you have it now, is classic still tank fermented. It's medium bodied. It shows liveliness, and Furmint is not an aroma variety like Sauvignon Blanc or Muscat or Muscat. It's more distinctive. It shows a little bit of yellow fruits, so ripe pears, quince apples, which is very typical because it also has a little bit of herbaceous kind of taste. And it's absolutely a rarity. So it's a niche product, but if you have a Furmint in your portfolio, you're the only one 200 kilometers or 200 miles around who has that. And finally, it also is a good food bearing wine. So that wine with some fish or with some salty Austrian strudel variations, that's a pretty good match. And you can believe me because I tried it 1,000 times. Furmint can be consumed when it's fresh and young, but it can also last for a few years. That's the advantage of this variety. As according that is not an aromatic variety, it's living more from its structure, and structure can last for just a few years. The Zweigelt is from 2017, 18, 19 in a row have been very, very good years for us. There haven't been any big climate problems. And Zweigelt is a typical Austrian grape. It's an Austrian crossing. In the 1920s, there was a man called Fritz Zweigelt. He was crossing the St. Laurent variety with the Blaufränkisch. So the two traditional red wine varieties, he crossed together, and the result was a Zweigelt. The goals of the crossing have been good yields, early ripening, low acidity, and all these goals have been reached. And up to the 1980s, it had no good recommendation because people said it's just good yielding, no really tight wines, but it changed radically. Zweigelt has good potential. People in Austria and in Germany love Zweigelt. And nowadays we always have Zweigelt because Zweigelt has a natural demand on our market. And I have to say, it's a Zweigelt from a Blaufränkisch soil. So that's classically deriving from that chalk loam combination. And from there, it gets its cool fruit character. On the other side of the lake, you have the sandy soils with 3 weeks earlier ripeness. There it's more the strawberry jammy aromas, maybe a little bit a hint of Zinfandel with it, But our Zweigel is very cool, more remembering on a Dolcetto or Barbera, if we compare it with international varieties. And that's a real charming wine. It's very pleasant, it's easy to drink, and it's just a basic wine. So that's where our quality philosophy starts. And I can say, and I can promise, also in our basic wine, it's just own grapes, and it's made with lifeblood, so people can count of it. And it's also good for the gastronomy, but served by glass. That's a very nice glass of wine for not very much money. I'm just going through the wines quite quickly, because in my experience is people want to enjoy their wines without having an Austrian guy in their ears speaking perfect Oxford English and interrupting them all the time. So the Blaufränkisch, the basic Blaufränkisch, the classic Blaufränkisch, as we call it, is our most important wine. And out of our big portfolio, people always ask, so what's your favorite wine? And as I always have to say, no, that depends on the situation. Is it on the winter fire, or is it on the terrace in spring? And then they say, now what wine would you, out of your portfolio, would you take with you on the island, lonely island? And then I have to say, that's the Blaufränkisch. Blaufränkisch is fruity. It shows this cherry and black pepper I was speaking quite often about. And if it's cool, you can match it even instead of a white wine. If it's warmer and if it's decanted, that's a real serious red wine already. And with the Blaufränkisch, I have to tell you, this is a Central European variety with the center in Austria. So I think in Austria we make the best Blaufränkisch. And there's a lot of different clones, a lot of Blaufränkisch selections, like you know it from Pinot Noir, all over the world. And our Blaufränkisch type of selection was selected by my great-grandfather and my grandfather. It's a type of Blaufränkisch which flowers very early, end of May. And in that time, there's the last cold period of the year, and the flowering mostly is very bad. So that results in very low yields. And even in challenging vintages like 2010 or 2014, we have been able to get very ripe physiological ripeness, not speaking only about sugar ripeness, but physiological ripeness when the seeds are ripe. And this kind of Blaufränkisch material is for the Triebaumers as important as for the caveman the fire was. So that's a special reason why this is the chief variety. And we are always, year for year, we are very proud for our classic Blaufränkisch, because that's a good good message to the wine world. We can do that because there's a lot of technology. People can make wines more pleasant, more round, more whatever, more oaky, but you don't have one way to make a wine more fruity and more fresh. And this has to be donated by nature. And Blaufränkisch is a perfect example for that. If you once have the smell of the cherries and the black pepper. There's now a wrong headline with the bottle. We are speaking about the Muscato. So you have to imagine it's Saturday evening. Shit happens to say it like Forrest Gump. Now, put away the Blaufränkisch and think for your, if you close your eyes, you have to think the headline is Muscato. That's also one of our favorites. And it also shows that we don't just only look into our garden, we also look over the fence. And when we have been in Piemont, we found the Muscato Dusty which is a very pleasant kind of sparkling wine. And back to Rust in 2002 already, we said, why don't we produce that kind of wine? We have the Muscat, we have the Muscat with the good acidity. Let's try. And we have been the first in Austria to make that kind of wine north of the Alps. We stop fermenting, we stop fermentation at 7% of alcohol. So that's right the center, at the mid of the halfway of Moscato d'Asti or Asti Spumante. So Moscato d'Asti has about 5% of alcohol. That's very, very grape juicy sometimes. And Asti Spumante has 9% of alcohol. That's already quite winey. And we decided, okay, let's stop it on the half of the way. With 7%, that should be a good match for at least Austrian German developed palates. Very good acidity in comparison, and incredible 90 gram of residual sugar. The highest guessing I ever had with people in times when we have been face to face with people, I don't know when it was 66 gram. But it's in reality, it's 90 gram, which is quite high. But if you taste it, you see you have the acidity of the Muscat, you have the cold temperature, you serve it, and you have the enormous elderberry fruit, so the 90 gram are covered completely. And by law, it has to be maximum 2.49 bar of pressure in the bottle. That's crazy, because in Italy they are allowed to have it with 3.5 bar, which is even more pleasant. And we do it since 2002, as I said. And the special thing is, so the wine already costs a little bit of money. The special thing is, this is no added CO2. So all the CO2 is deriving from fermentation. It's not injected because it was fermented in a pressure tank, and the fermentation was stopped with high pressure up to 7 bar and up to 7 atmospheres, and going down to 0 degrees of Celsius. So that finishes fermentation. Then it's stored in the pressure tank for at least 1 month to integrate the acidity better into the medium. And we also have been the first one in Austria to use the very fancy gas twister, which is a German invention. And that's the only wine closure we know where there's directly gas on gas, no silicone in between. And we have very good experience with that. You see, now I already finished my presentation. I would be able to tell you much more, but my experience is, after 1 hour of my bombardment, people's brains are full. Please empty the bottles carefully, show it to other people, and tell the people, look, there are some guys in Austria, they try hard, and maybe the times will arrive when you can travel again, or may travel again. Visit us in Rust, but tell us before. And finally, I have to say, there's light on the end of the tunnel, and it's not the train. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Gunther. That was an incredible presentation. Thank you for introducing us to your winery and these beautiful wines. Thank you also to Lewis and Stephen for facilitating this event. We appreciate everyone's interest in the great wines of Austria, and we encourage you to visit our website calendar at corkandfork.co to view the upcoming Austrian wine events with some of the region's greatest producers, such as Gunther and Regina. One more opportunity, Gunther, is there anything you'd like to say before we say goodnight?
Yeah, drink slowly, but drink steadily, and have a good time with Austrian and Triebammer wine. Thank you very much.
Lovely. Thank you, everyone, for your time this evening. I'm going to end the meeting for all. Good night.